The anointing of the hands of the bishop with chrism arranges the mechanism of the distribution of the three kinds of force from the three aspects of the Trinity. The direct line of communication between body and the astral body is opened fully, so that if and when that body, or intuition, is developed, it may flow through at once into what is intended to be its expression in physical life. The development of the ideal bishop is possible to one who takes advantage of every opportunity. All of his principles become responsive channels to the power of the Christ, and he becomes a veritable son of spiritual energy and blessing. This stage is indicated in diagram 34H. The perfect man is not only linked with the Christ, and with his own highest self, the monad, but becomes ever more and more an epiphany of the Logos or deity, who brought forth the solar system. He becomes the master, for whom incarnation is no longer necessary. Diagram 35 indicates this stage. Another provision in the Christian religion is the power of absolution, vested in the priests. As this affects the relations between the various bodies of man, we may usefully consider it briefly here. The bodies of man are not, of course, separate in space, but interpenetrating. Looked at from below, however, they give the impression of being joined by innumerable fine wires or lines of fire. Every action which works against evolution puts an unequal strain upon these twists and entangles them. When a man goes badly wrong, the confusion becomes such that communication between the higher and lower bodies is seriously impeded. He is no longer his real self, page 238, and only the lower side of the character is able to manifest itself fully. Page 158, whilst the natural forces will straighten out the distortion in due time, yet the Church provides for the work being done more speedily, for the power of straightening out this tangle in higher matter is one of those powers specifically conferred upon a priest at ordination. The cooperation of the man himself is, of course, also needed, for, if we confess our sins, he is faithful and just to forgive us our sins, and to cleanse us from all unrighteousness. The effect of absolution is strictly limited to the correction of the distortion above described. It reopens certain channels, which have been to a large extent closed by evil thought or action, but it in no way counteracts the physical consequences of that action, nor does it obviate the necessity of restitution, where wrong has been done. The priest's action straightens out the etheric, astral and mental entanglement produced by the wrong action, or rather by the mental attitude which made that action possible, but it does not in any way relieve the man from the karmic penalty of his action. Be not deceived, God is not mocked, for whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. One other item of information, regarding the work of the priest in the Holy Eucharist, may be mentioned. In making the three crosses, at bless, approve, and ratify, over the offerings, the priest pushes his tube through the etheric, astral and lower mental matter respectively, and the two crosses made separately over the wafer and the chalice, carry the same tube, now into branches, on through the higher mental into the plane above. Page 239. In doing this, he should use the forces of his own causal body, pressing his thought upward to the highest possible level. Turning now to Freemasonry, we find that the three principal officers represent Ma, Buddhi and Manas in man, and that the three assistant officers represent the lower mind, the emotional nature or the astral body, and the etheric double, the Oji or Tyler represents the physical body. As we are in this book concerned principally with the causal body, we may note especially that the higher mind is represented by the JW, in the Devas, nature spirits and elementals associated with the JW. A golden hue predominates. When the RWM creates, receives and constitutes the candidate as an EAF, the three touches of the FS convey different aspects of power, corresponding to the three aspects of Trinity, the first conveying strength to the brain, the second love to the heart, and the third executive ability to the right arm. The general effect of this downpouring of force is to widen somewhat the channel of communication, page 159, between the ego and the personality of the candidate. The degree of EAF corresponds to the subdeacon in the Christian system. At a similar point in the second degree ceremony, There is a more decided widening of the link between the ego and the personality, so that it is opened up as a definite channel for the downpouring of force. This channel the candidate can utilize with marked effect, if he sets himself to work upon it and through it. In this degree, there is a certain parallel between the passing of a F.C. and the ecclesiastical ordination to the diaconate. At the same time, a link is made between the candidate and the HOATF, in those lodges where he is acknowledged. As in the case of the widening of consciousness, the link that is made is for the candidate to utilize as he pleases. It may be of greatest benefit to him, it may change the whole of his life, and enable him to, page 240, make rapid progress along the path that leads to initiation. Or, on the other hand, if he entirely neglects it, it may make but very little difference to him. The proving of the MM by the square and the compasses indicate that a M.M may be tested and known by the fact that both the higher self and the lower self are in working order, are functioning together and in harmony. The MM is symbolical of the initiate of the fourth degree, the Arhat. At that stage of attainment, on the occult path, the battle against the lower quaternary is practically over, and the latter has become an obedient instrument in the hands of the higher triad, which is awake and active in all its three parts. The MM has to find the G.Sun the sea, in other words, it is by finding in himself the deeper self, which is the monad, beyond even a higher triad, that the MM will at last discover the supreme secret of life, and will then find in very truth, by his own living experience, that he is, and always has been, one with God. In earlier degrees, the consciousness of the candidate had to be raised from the S to the C, that is, from the quadrilateral to the triangle, from the lower to the higher self. But now, as a MM it has to be raised from the triangle, to the point, as is clearly indicated by the WT from the higher self to the monad. The monad is now beginning to work his will in the higher self, as before the higher self worked his will in the lower. The ST represents the action of that monad, as it turns upon a center pin, and sends out a line from its own body as it spins the web of life, just as a spider spins its web from its own body. The P marks that chosen path, or ray of the monad, the line of life and work which the Arhat must, page 160, discover, and on which he must specialize, in order to make rapid progress. And the C once more represent the triangle, the powers of the triple spirit, which he must use in his work. The currents of etheric force, which flow through and, page 241, around the spine of every human being, are stimulated into activity, in Freemasonry, in order that the evolution of the candidate may be quickened. This stimulation is applied at the moment when the RWM creates, receives and constitutes. In the first degree, it affects Ida, the feminine aspect of the force, thus making it easier for the candidate to control passion and emotion. In the second degree, it is the Pingala, or masculine aspect, which is strengthened, in order to facilitate the control of mind. The third degree, the central energy itself, the Sushumna, is aroused, thereby opening the way for the pure spirit from on high. It is by passing up this channel of the Sushumna that a yogi leaves his physical body at will, in such a manner that he can retain full consciousness on higher planes, and bring back into his physical brain a clear memory of his experiences. Ida is crimson in color, Pingala is yellow and Sushumna is deep blue. The stimulation of these nerves, and the forces which flow through them, is only a small part of the benefit conferred by the R.W.M. when he wields the sword at the moment of admission. The widening of the connection between the individuality and the personality has already been mentioned, also the formation of a link between certain principles of the candidate and the corresponding vehicles of the HOATF. The changes induced are somewhat of the same nature as those described on p.233etsec.com, but of less pronounced character. Whilst these effects are real, unmistakable and universal, yet their result in the spiritual life of the candidate depends, of course, on himself. The EA should, as a personality, be employed on organizing his physical life for higher use, but at the same time, as an ego, he should be developing active intelligence in his causal body, exactly as does the pupil of a master, who is preparing himself for initiation. In the same way, the FC is organizing his emotional life, page 242, while he unfolds intuitional love, in his Buddhic body. The MM, while arranging his mental life down here, should, as an ego, be strengthening his spiritual will, Atma. Page 161, Chapter 29, Memory of Past Lives, page 243, a glance at diagram 25 on p.147 should be sufficient to indicate the mechanical reason why the physical brain of a man cannot normally remember his past lives. For it is obvious that the physical body can have neither a memory, nor a record, of a past incarnation in which it did not participate. Precisely the same consideration applies to his astral and mental bodies, since all these vehicles are new for each incarnation. We thus see that, as the causal body is the only one that persists from one incarnation to another, the lowest level, at which we can hope to get really reliable information about past lives, is that of the causal body, for nothing below, that can give us first-hand evidence. In these past lives, the ego in his causal body was present, or rather a certain small part of him was present, and so he is an actual witness. All the lower vehicles, not being witness, can report only what they may receive from the ego. Consequently, when we bear in mind how imperfect is the communication between the ego and the personality and the ordinary man, we shall see at once how entirely unreliable such second, third, or fourth-hand testimony is likely to be. Although one may sometimes obtain from the astral and mental bodies isolated pictures of events in a man's past life, we cannot get a sequential and coherent account of it, and even those pictures are but reflections from the causal body, and probably very dim and blurred reflections, which occasionally find their way through to the lower consciousness. It is thus abundantly clear that, in order to read accurately past lives, it is necessary first of all, page 244, to develop the faculties of the causal body. The thing, however, could be done at lower levels, by psychometrization of the permanent atoms. But, as this would be a much more difficult feat than unfolding of the senses of the causal body, it is not at all likely to be attempted successfully. Including the method just mentioned, there are four methods of reading past lives: 1. Psychometrization of the permanent atoms. 2. To take the ego's own memory of what happened. 3. To psychometrize the ego, or rather his causal body, and see for ourselves the experiences through which he has passed. This method is safer than 2, because even an ego, having seen things through a past personality, may have imperfect or prejudiced impressions of them. Page 162. 4. To use the Buddhic faculties, becoming completely one with the ego under investigation, and to read his experiences as though they were our own, that is, from within, instead of from without. This method obviously demands much higher development. Methods 3 and 4 have been employed by those who prepared the series of incarnations, which have been published during the past few years in The Theosophist, some of them having also been produced in book form. The investigators had also the advantage of the intelligent cooperation of the ego, whose incarnations were described. The physical presence of the subject, whose lives are being read, is an advantage, but not a necessity. He is useful, provided he can keep his vehicles perfectly calm. But, if he becomes excited, he spoils everything. The surroundings are not specially important, but quiet is essential, because, if impressions are to be brought through clearly, the physical brain must be calm. It is necessary also to eradicate absolutely all prejudices, otherwise they will produce the effect of stained glass, coloring everything which is seen through them, and so giving a false impression. Page 245. We may say that there are two sources of error possible: 1. Personal bias. 2. Limited views. In view of the fact that there are fundamental differences of temperament, these cannot but color the views taken of other planes. Everyone below the level of an adept is sure to be influenced in this manner to some extent. The man of the world magnifies unimportant details, and omits the important things, being in the habit of doing this in daily life. On the other hand, A man starting on the path may, in his enthusiasm, lose for a time his touch with the ordinary human life, from which he has emerged. But even so, he has the advantage, for those who see the inside of things are nearer the truth than those who see only the outside. In order to minimize this sort of error, it is usual for people of radically different types to work together at these investigations. The second danger we have mentioned is that of a limited view, of taking a part for the whole. Thus, one may take a view of a small portion of a given community, and apply it to the whole community, that is, one may fall into the common error of generalizing on insufficient basis of observation. There is, however, a general aura of a time or a country, which usually prevents any great mistakes of this sort. A psychic, who has not been trained to sense this general aura, is often unconscious of it, and may thus fall into many errors. Long-continued observation shows that all untrained psychics are sometimes reliable, and sometimes unreliable, and those who consult them therefore run the risk of being misled. Page 163. In looking at past lives, it is safer to retain full physical consciousness, so as to be able to make a note of everything, while it is being observed, than to leave the physical body during the observations, and trust to memory to their reproduction. This latter plan, however, has to be adopted when the student, though able to use the causal body, can do so only while the physical body is asleep. Page 246. The identification of egos is sometimes difficult, because egos naturally change considerably in the course of some thousands of years. Some investigators feel an intuition as to the identity of a particular ego, and, although such an intuition may often be right, it may certainly also sometimes be wrong. The safer, but more laborious, method of identification, is to pass the records rapidly in review, and trace the ego concerned through them, until he is found at the present day. In some cases, the egos of ordinary people are instantly recognizable, even after thousands of years. That does not speak particularly well of the people concerned, because it means that they have made but little progress. To try to recognize, 20,000 years ago, one whom one knows at the present day, is somewhat like meeting as an adult someone whom one knew long ago as a child. Sometimes recognition is possible, sometimes the change has been too great. Those who have since become masters of the wisdom are often instantly recognizable, even thousands of years ago, but that is for a different reason. For, when the lower vehicles are already fully in harmony with the ego, they form themselves into the likeness of the orgeades, and so change little from life to life. Similarly, when the ego himself is becoming a perfect reflection of the monad, he also changes but little, though he gradually grows, hence he is readily recognizable. The nature of the Akashic records having been already described in the mental body, a few of the more immediately relevant points only will be mentioned here. In examining a past life, the easiest way is to let the record drift past at its natural rate. But, as this would mean a day's work to look up the events of each day, it is clearly impracticable, except for short periods. It is, however, possible to accelerate or retard the passage of events to any degree required, so that a period of thousands of years may be run through rapidly, page 247, or any particular picture may be held as long as desired. What is described as the unrolling of the record is, in reality, not a movement of the record, but of the consciousness of the seer. But the impression which it gives is exactly as though the record itself were unrolled. The records may be said to lie upon one another in layers, the more recent on top and the older ones behind. Yet even this simile is misleading, because it suggests the idea of thickness, whereas the records occupy no more space than does the reflection on the surface of a mirror. The consciousness does not really move in space at all, but rather puts on itself, as a kind of cloak, one or other of the layers of the record, and, in doing so, it finds itself in the midst of the action of the story. The method of arriving at dates has been described in the mental body, page 242. Page 164. It is, on the whole, somewhat easier to read lives forwards than backwards, because in that case we are working with the natural flow of time, instead of against it. The languages employed are almost always unintelligible to the investigator, but, as the thoughts behind the words lie open before him, that matters little. On several occasions, investigators have copied down public inscriptions, which they could not understand, and have afterwards had them translated on the physical plane, by someone to whom the ancient language was familiar. The records must not be thought of as originally inherent in matter of any kind, though they are reflected in it. In order to read them, it is not necessary to come into direct contact with any particular grouping of matter, since they can be read from any distance, when a connection has once been made. Nevertheless, it is true that each atom contains the record, or perhaps possesses the power to put a clairvoyant en rapport with the record, of all that has ever, page 248, happened within sight of it. It is in fact, on account of this phenomenon that psychometry is possible. But there is attached to it a very curious limitation, in that the psychometer sees, by means of it, only what he would have seen if he had been standing at the spot from which the object psychometrized has been taken. For example, if a man psychometrizes a pebble, which has been lying for ages in a valley, he will see only what has passed during those ages in that valley. His view will be limited by the surrounding hills, just as if he had stood for all those ages where the stone lay, and had witnessed all those things. There is, however, an extension of psychometric power, by which a man may see the thoughts and feelings of the actors in his drama, as well as their physical bodies. There is also another extension by which, having first established himself in that valley, he may make it the basis of further operations, and so pass over the surrounding hills and see what lies beyond them, and also what has happened there since the stone was removed, and even what occurred before it in some manner arrived there. But the man who can do all this will soon be able to dispense with the stone altogether. When using the senses of the causal body, it is seen that every object is throwing off pictures of the past. We have already seen that, as the inner faculties are developed, life becomes continuous. Not only can the consciousness of the ego be reached, but it is possible to travel back, even as far as the animal group soul, and look through animal eyes at the world which then exited. The difference of outlook is said to be so different as to make description impossible. Short of such continuous consciousness, there is no detailed memory of the past, not even of the most, page 165, important facts. There is, however, this fact, that whatever we have known in the past we are almost sure to recognize and instantly accept, as soon as it is again presented to us in the present. Page 249. Hence, though one may appreciate intellectually the truth of reincarnation, actual proof can be obtained only in the causal body, where the ego is cognizant of his past. When a man, using the consciousness of his causal body, has always with him the memory of all his past lives, he is of course, capable of consciously directing the various lower manifestations of himself at all points of his progress. During the stages in which the man is not yet fully capable of this, the ego can nevertheless impress his purpose upon his permanent atoms, so that that purpose will be carried over from life to life. Knowledge of this will not be born inherent in the man, as part of his stock in trade, so to speak, but the moment it comes before him, in any form, in his next incarnation, he will immediately recognize its truth, seize upon it, and act accordingly. In the case of a very quick rebirth, the possibility of recovering the memory of the past incarnation is considerably increased. Diagram 25, P.147. Should make the mechanism of this possibility easy to understand. There have been a large number of atoms and molecules, in the old mental and astral bodies, which have preserved a certain affinity with the mental unit and astral permanent atom, and consequently a good deal of the old material may be used in building the new mental and astral bodies. With their assistance, it is clear that memory of the last incarnation should be more easily attained than in cases where there has been a long interval between lives, and the old materials have all been dissipated and spread through the various planes. We do not yet understand the laws which govern the power to impress the detailed knowledge of one life upon the physical brain of the next. Such evidence as is at present available seems to show that details are usually forgotten, but that broad principles appear to the new mind as self-evident. It is a common experience, on hearing of a truth, page 250, for the first time, to feel that one has known it before, though one has never been able to formulate it in words. In other cases, there is scarcely even that degree of memory, yet when the new truth is presented, it is instantly recognized as true. Assuming the truth of tradition, even the Buddha himself, who incarnated with the definite intention of helping the world, knew nothing clearly of his mission after he had entered his new body, but regained full knowledge only after years of searching for it. Undoubtedly he could have known from the first, had he so chosen, but he did not so choose, submitting himself rather to what seems to be the common lot. On the other hand, it may be that the Buddha did not take the body of Prince Siddhartha from birth, but only when it fainted, after the long austerities of the 6 years searching for truth. If this be so, there would be no memory, because the entity in the body was not the Buddha, but someone else. Page 166. In any case, however, we may be sure that the ego, who is the true man, always knows what he has once learned, but he is not always able to impress it upon his new brain without the help of a suggestion from without. It seems to be an invariable rule that one who has accepted occult truth in one life always comes into contact with it in the next, and so revives his dormant memory. We may say, perhaps, that the opportunity of thus recovering the truth is the direct karma of having accepted and of having earnestly tried to live according to it in the previous incarnation. Page 167, Chapter 30, The Ego on His Own Plane, page 251, we come now to consider the ego as a conscious entity on his own plane, that is, in the higher mental or causal world, quite apart from the partial expressions of himself on the lower planes. From the moment that the ego breaks off from his group soul, and commences his separate existence as a human being, he is a conscious entity, but the consciousness is of an exceedingly vague nature. The forces of the higher mental world pass through him practically without affecting him, because he cannot as yet respond to more than a very few of such extremely fine vibrations. The only physical sensation, to which this condition is at all comparable, is that which occasionally comes to some persons, at the moment of awakening in the morning. There is a state, intermediate between sleeping and waking, in which a man is blissfully conscious that he exists, and yet is not conscious of any surrounding objects, nor capable of any movement. Indeed, he sometimes knows that any movement would break the spell of happiness, and bring him down into the ordinary waking world, and so he endeavors to remain still as long as possible. This condition, which is a consciousness of existence, and of intense bliss, closely resembles that of the ego of the average man upon the higher mental plane. As we have seen previously, he is wholly centered there, only for the short time intervening between the end of one life in devachan and the commencement of his next descent into incarnation. During that short period, he obtains a fleeting glimpse of his past and his future, a flash of retrospect and prospect, and for many ages these glimpses are his only moments of full awakening. And, page 252, after this momentary awakening, he falls asleep again. As we have seen, it is his desire for a more perfect manifestation, his desire to feel himself more thoroughly alive, that drives him into the effort of incarnation. A stanza in the Book of Dzogchen states that those who received but a spark remained destitute of knowledge, the spark burned low. H.P. Blavatsky then explains that those who received but a spark constitute the average humanity, which have to acquire their intellectuality during the present Manvantaric evolution. Secret Doctrine, 2,177. In the case of most men the spark is still smoldering, and it will be many an age before its slow increase brings it to the stage of steady and brilliant flame. The causal body of the average man has thus as yet almost no consciousness of anything, external to itself, on its own plane. The immense majority of egos are but dreamily semi-conscious, though few are now in the condition of mere colorless films. The majority are not yet sufficiently definite, even in such consciousness as they possess, to understand the purpose or the laws of the evolution in which they are engaged. Although the ordinary ego is still in a sleepy condition, he is yet, during physical life, capable to some extent of brooding watchfully over the personality, and of a little effort,